Whether it's banning the statute of limitations on sexual assault cases or eliminating the use of cash bail in the criminal justice system, lawmakers in Nevada are in the process of considering hundreds of bills this legislative session. KUNR's Paul Boger sat down with Fred Locken, a longtime political science professor at Truckee Meadows Community College, to break down the session thus far.
So you've been following Nevada politics, Fred, for the better part of 30 years now. You know, and I want to talk a little bit about this particular legislative session. What is your impression thus far?
Well, I spend a great deal of time talking to a lot of other individuals that have sizable experience in dealing with past legislatures. And there's a general consensus that it's been off to a good start. This is a major transition with party change in across all the constitutional offices almost. And then the reality of term limits is completely kicking the butt of the state of Nevada now. So we have a lot of greenness to any session. We don't have the depth of leadership, the experience, the sense of how it works like we used to. But all of that said, they have seemed to be able to keep it together on the Democratic side, much easier on the Republican side because it's a small herd. But they've handled the Atkinson affair, and I think they're handling the Sprinkle affair as well as any previous administration or legislative session has dealt with scandal, because we've had that before, and has more or less just gotten past it, hasn't become preoccupied with it. It's a little early yet. Most of the legislative session invariably happens in the last month, and I think the jury is still out on whether there's going to be a little bit more progressivism than Nevada is ready for, or whether we're going to see any tensions that at least publicly develop between the governor and the legislature. But right now, there seems to be perhaps an unexpected level of cooperation and harmony operating, I would say. I think, though, that this leadership knows the bills they want to get through. And I honestly think this governor came in with a level of experience that maybe we have not seen in the past. After all, running Clark County is even more complicated than the state. So that experience actually works well, I think, in Carson City. And I think there were a number of policy positions that were taken that really harangued the Republicans, but their bargaining chips come May to be able to get the budget passed by the two-thirds needed. A number of those things were, I think, put out there just to be traded away. So I don't know that we're trying to completely reverse 2015, but you kind of got the feeling after the state of the state that that was exactly the plan. And it is also a lesson that really we should stay kind of somewhere in the middle in the legislative process, because whenever you wig out in one direction or the other, then there's always that revenge factor, that retaliation factor that seeps in. Understandable. It went too far. It hurt too many people. And the Democrats felt that way after 2015. So I'm really waiting to see which of that agenda survives the process and gets to Sisolak. But this is a large, very large majority, of course, in the state assembly, and large enough in the state senate. So I think it's on track as well as most legislative sessions have been on track at this point in time.
Want to go back to what some of you were talking about just a second ago. So far, there's been two fairly high-profile resignations of Democrats. What impact do you think that's going to have on the remainder of the session?
Well, it's leadership that had been deeply involved in the architecture of this session, one in the Assembly and one in the Senate. And so it has truly a rarefied impact. We haven't seen something like this, as far as I know, of sort of a double resignation within one party. But again, that said, perhaps enough stability in the rest of the leadership to sort of coalesce around it. They've found others that have been able to step in already for Atkinson, and the same thing is going on with Sprinkle's replacement. So, again, I think sort of an agility that suggests that this is a pretty stable Democratic coalition going forward.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Democratic agenda. We've already seen the passage of one of their major priorities, the expanded gun background check bill. How likely are they to push through the rest of those priority items?
I think they believe deeply in them. This size majority and the changing nature of politics in Nevada are reflected in this session. this surge by Democrats was something that I've anticipated after 2016, and I think continues. Demographically, this is a state that is fading from purple into blue. You don't just flip a switch and it happens, but you see these harbingers, these various elections that suggest a trend is shaping. And in this sense, I don't think there is enough support yet for a substantial progressive agenda to advance. And certainly the state Senate remains a firewall, lacking the two-thirds majority for the Democrats. But I'm anticipating to see continued progress by the Democrats in 2020, which suggests that we are going to be seeing a very gradual shift in what has been the politics of Nevada, the agenda of Nevada. So there are a number of elements to the agenda for the Democrats this time that, again, I think are bargaining chips. You have to do that. Ever since we've gotten the two-thirds requirement, both parties have played that game. The governor, I think, is clearly in sync with that. It's just, as the outsider, I don't know which ones they really are deeply committed to and the others that they figure they can sign off until the 2021 session. But some of those are going to pass. I think that whether it's construction defect or it is the prevailing wage, which is a real heartburn issue for Republicans, or it's the myriad of other things that they sort of transacted in the 2015 legislature that made Democrats mad and probably helped to lead to the Democratic majority that they have there today. So they are feeling their strength, but they also will have to balance because of the nature of some of the votes.
On the flip side of that coin, we heard a lot of talk early in the session about the need for bipartisanship, working together. Republicans have kind of leaned on that considering their position. Do you think that the Democratic majority is going to allow for any movement on the other side of the aisle?
Well, we are seeing bipartisanship. There was just a press conference this week that launched the effort to remove the statute of limitation for rape and for sexual violence. And in essence, I think that there are always topics that speak not to party, but to common sense and to the needs for Nevada society. But most of their agenda, whether it's on the Republican side or Democratic side, is a very political agenda. And by that nature, there is very little middle ground. I'm either for prevailing wage or I'm against prevailing wage. There's no happy middle ground on that one. And so I think that invoking bipartisanship is a nice thing, but we're not going to see much of it at all. And it's understandable because the agendas are pretty edgy. They're not centrist at this point in time. And we would need far more centrist members of the Republican delegation and some movement on the Democratic side to be able to find that middle ground in this session.
At this point, we've seen most of the legislation that's going to be introduced this session. What are you personally looking at, and is there anything that's caught your eye that no one seems to be talking about yet?
So far, no. I mean, this is a typical first session for a new governor. It's mostly Sandoval's budget. There's never a whole lot of time to be able to tweak it. And I think philosophically, Steve Sisolak was comfortable with much of what Sandoval was doing. Sandoval was a remarkable governorship, one that wasn't so partisan and therefore was able to literally see Democratic support and tremendous public support. Sisolak is starting at that point. I think that he earnestly believes that a number of the reforms that Sandoval implemented in K-12, for instance, had validity, and so he's working to see those expanded. Where we will see, I think, dramatic changes are in a more aggressive desire to try to do something about health care, to try to do something about the mental health crisis, the social fabric. It was important to Sandoval, but he was working normally with either a Republican majority in one session or not a strong Democratic majority in the next. But Sisolak has strength, and I think he'd get some, none of these issues other than the cost factor in the budget are going to require the two-thirds vote. So I'm honestly expecting that part of the Democratic agenda on the social safety net will be a priority moving through this session.
Fred Locken is a political scientist with Truckee Meadows Community College. Fred, thanks so much for joining me.
Well, thank you.
You can find all of KUNR's political coverage online at KUNR.org.